What is up? It is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Mick Heyman. He is a CFA. He is an investment counselor with Heyman Investment Counseling. He is a financial industry veteran and thought leader. He is an all-around great guy and the author of Mellow Your Money. We had a great conversation that started, of course, with two truths and a lie. Talked about how to navigate our current world where we're constantly getting new, scary, exciting, shiny information and ideas coming at us. What successful investing and long-term successful and sustainable investing looks like, the cost of reacting versus making logical, good, thoughtful decisions. We talked about anxiety and overcoming that. We talked about the danger of chasing trends. Also talked about why does it feel really bad this time and how it always feels really bad this time. It's true throughout history. We talked about imagining how it's going to feel, more importantly, how we're going to feel when certain scenarios happen, like market crashes and the potential of losing money and how that's going to affect us. We had a great difference-making tip, and I know that you are going to love it. Let's go. Mick, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please, sir.
I will do it. But first, George, thanks for having me here. I'm excited to be on the show. All right. So number one, I have surfed on one of the longest waves in the world, sometimes ranked number one, sometimes 8 or 10, but goes over a mile long. That's number one. Number two is, in 1988, I was named one of the top traders on the Chicago Board of Trade.
Excellent.
And number three is, I have a book that was published that was ranked number one on Amazon.
Holy cow. Those are all very, very believable. I know that you are a surfer. I know that you lived in Chicago, and I know that you are an author. So which one is it? Maybe the first one is the lie, the mile long wave.
Actually, I have been on that wave. I have surfed it. I did not make it the mile. My son did, actually.
Okay. Nice.
And it's in Chicama, Peru. Huh? And it's an amazing wave. And you just point your board to the left and off you go. And the geography is so strange. And I was able to get pretty far along it. But it is ranked, some people say number one. Sometimes it's you know, 8 or 10. But It's a beautiful place to go. So, so I have been on that wave.
Okay.
And so what's the lie? The lie is, if they would have had an award for the worst trader in 1988, I had never traded on the Chicago Board of Trade, but I would have been closer to the worst than the best. I learned that trading is not my thing when I tried to trade. And so that was actually a wonderful education for me to try to trade and be unsuccessful and realize it's the long term. And so
there you go. You got me.
And by the way, just for full disclosure, my book ranking was number one for new releases on Amazon in my category. And I think it lasts for a day.
That's awesome.
But I got a picture of it. Proof.
Good. I love it. How long does it take to surf a mile long wave?
Several minutes. I mean, and you were just in Solana Beach. So if you were surfing at all, you know, many waves can take, you know, you're up for 3 or 4 or 5 seconds.
Right.
It seems like several minutes because you're so pumped up. But this one, yeah, it can take some minutes.
That's just got to be such a different experience. I mean, I'm sure that you're becoming fatigued because you're like, I can't believe I'm still surfing.
Exactly. And it's funny, too, that we were at a boutique hotel that had a boat. And so the boat would pick you up at wherever you were and then drive you back to where you could start on the wave again.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could keep going and going and going. Whereas the locals were telling us they served two waves because you had to walk a mile, paddle out, surf, and then walk back the mile.
Right.
And by then two waves, you were done.
That's awesome. Well, what is top of mind for you right now, Mick?
I think one thing that you know, it's on top of mind of me and certainly clients that call me up is there's a constant excitement and with newsworthy events. Of course, right now it's election related stuff. We've had war issues not that long ago. Last year we were panicked about what was the Fed going to do in the economy. And a year before that, we thought inflation was heading back to the 1970s. And there's this constant excitement of whatever the current news is. And so top of mind of me is trying to encourage whoever I can talk to put things in perspective. And the whole, that phrase, that wonderful phrase, "This too shall pass," try to keep that on the front of your mind all the time, because these are passing events. And believe me, there will be a next thing and the next thing after that. And if we get caught up too much on whatever the current theme is, we just have anxiety all the time. And particularly with investing, it's not helpful. And it doesn't mean, if you're a political person, jump into politics. That's not my gig, but I'm not saying don't participate and be passionate, but try to keep those passions away from your investments. That, you know, in other words, if so-and-so gets elected, it doesn't mean you sell everything or buy everything. Or if you think that some policy is going to, you know, be promoted, we have plenty of examples where, you know, people thought green energy stocks were going to be fantastic when this last administration got elected. Well, they were for about, you know, a few months, and they were terrible. And so don't overemphasize whatever's currently going on with your investing, and try to put in your mind that we want to focus on the long game.
I appreciate that, but it feels, Mick, like this time it's really the worst time.
It does, and it constantly does feel like that. Though I, with a friend, looked back in history at other elections. You know, in the 50s, you had McCarthyism, and where they're literally calling out, you know, people, you know, movie stars and such, and for being communists, and it looked like the end of democracy, right? Or in the 30s, you had communism was a real threat that you know, it was a terrible time in our nation's history for the, you know, the Depression. And who knows, communism, that's how it took hold in many places. And so we faced these, and I'm not, you know, and you don't need to pick sides, because either side in our political spectrum thinks the other one is going to destroy America. But that is not new. But it feels new, and it feels that way. But believe me, it felt that way to the people in the history, you know. And so I read a great book called *Sapiens*, and he went back into human history. And one of his lines was, you know, back in the caveman days, there were these snotty teenagers making fun of their parents. And, you know, we think that this is different. You know, our, you know, kids are all on their phones. And of course, the things are different, but our emotions are so similar. And so if we can have perspective in history that it feels different, but so did it for our mothers and grandmothers and fathers and our ancestors, that's just life.
I guess it makes me feel better that cave people experiencing the same things that I'm experiencing with my with my children as well.
Human emotions do not change, you know, the events do, but.
Yeah. So separating the way that I feel about anything outside with my investing. You said something that really stuck with me, talking about your experience trading, and it was an education. And I feel like we all want to take a swing at beating the markets. And then when we do it, we get that education in the form of losing a little bit of money.
And that's true. And I mean, that's true in investing and in our lives, that we, you know, it's our misadventures that is what is in our education. And there was a great trader, actually. I read his book. It was written by Jesse Livermore. It was published about 100 years ago. And if you hit great quotes of the stock market, you'll find him peppered throughout. One of his great quotes, though, I always thought is, he always looked at his mistakes as a tuition payment. And you're paying your tuition anyway. You just lost money, or you just, you know, fumbled this or that. You may as well take it as an education, because if you don't, you're going to pay that tuition again and again and again. And of course, we've all had that experience too. I'm not saying that every mistake I've made, I've said, okay, now I won't make that again. You know, sometimes there's a review class that needs to be repeated.
We do need a little bit of a refresher.
But I do think that if we could look at our lives and our investing as opportunities to learn, we can be a little more compassionate with ourselves, and also and take it as a lesson and not beat ourselves up. Now, with my own trading, it was enough to say that is not going to be my life's work, you know, and I better find something that's more fitting to my own personality.
So how does that fit in? If somebody says, but I get what you're saying, but I really want to be able to invest in stocks here and there. How do you reconcile all of that?
I think it's perspective. You know, my one story I've told is, even as a little kid, I would hear my grandpa and my uncle argue. And my grandpa was more like me. You know, in golf, you'd say he was the guy that would hit the ball down the middle, keep it out of the woods, not hit it so far. And my uncle was the big swinger. And they would fight. And my grandpa would say, oh, I have a stock, I'm trimming it back. I want to make sure I'm not out of balance. And my uncle would say, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. You either buy it or you sell it. You win big or you go home. And over time, I had great conversations. I tended to be more in my grandpa's camp. But as I talked with my uncle, and he swung big and he sometimes lost big. But what he learned was, in order to stay married to my aunt, that he had to put things in balance. That he had to have a part of his portfolio that was conservative, that was going to keep them together in his retirement so they could stay retired. But he had to swing big. That was his thing. And so, you know, with say, you know, 50 to 60% of his portfolio, they were either in conservative stocks or cash or bonds, so that he knew that that was the steady part. That was the long-term part. And with the other part, he'd swing, and he was willing to cut his losses if things were against him. It took time to figure that out, but in the financial crisis, he had a lot of banks. But when they would cross different thresholds, he'd say, forget it, I'm moving on. I'm not going to ride this to the bottom. And the other thing was, he was willing to hold on. I would be more of the take the profit, keep things balanced. I think when he passed away, he still had that 60, 70% in the conservative area. And then he had about 20% in Apple, because he never sold it. So if you're that kind of guy, make sure that it's balanced enough so you're going to meet your long-term goal, but give yourself a chance to make some money. I'm not a cryptocurrency guy, and I'm not a fan, and I don't understand it. But if somebody said to me, but I want to put a few $1,000s in it and they've got plenty of money, why not? Give yourself some chances to make some money, because if that's the type of person you are, you got to respect that too.
For people who are earlier in their investing career, for lack of a better term, or their investing experience, just getting started with investing, how do I know? How do I know what kind of investor I am if I'm your grandpa or your uncle?
Well, I think part of it is to imagine bad things happening. You know, I actually did that with a couple one time where they came in and they said, we're really scared about a crash like 1929. In hindsight, I should have listened to them because 3 weeks later, a 1987 Black Monday happened and the market crashed. And so they were, I don't know how they predicted that, but I didn't listen to them. But what I did do was say, well, listen, based on the amount of stocks you've got, if a crash happened, this is the amount of money that it would decline to. Is that okay? What would you panic? And they looked at that. And at that point, they had 30 or 40% in stocks, the rest in long bonds and cash. And so when the crash happened and I called them up and I said, boy, I wish I would have listened to you. They said, yeah, but guess what? And I told them what their portfolio was worth. It was exactly what we had projected. And they said, well, okay, you said if that happened, we would just start buying. So they had strong hands and we started buying at these low levels because they didn't panic, because they had already imagined a worst case scenario. Long answer to your question is, even at a young age, it's worthwhile to say, what if out of the blue, something weird happens? You know, we've had it, you know, in the last, you know, 25 years, we've had 9/11, we've had the pandemic, we've had the financial crisis. These things happen, and guess what? We're not gonna predict them. And if we do happen to predict them, we probably won't do the things that we need to do anyway. And so, imagine there is another thing out there. What would we do? And would we have strong hands with it? And for some, you know, young people, you'd say, buy 100% in stocks, let it go, be patient. But if you're going to panic, and each person has to try to imagine that, imagine it's your first $1,000. And you're going to hopefully over a lifetime invest hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe millions. But if you lose faith in stocks because you lost a couple hundred dollars on that first thousand, imagine the cost of long term, what that's going to affect. So I would even tell young kids, if you're not comfortable being 100% in stocks, don't let some, you know, advisor tell you that's where you should be. Each person has to try to figure that out. And of course, if you make some mistakes along the way, that's, again, treated as an education.
Yeah, I think that's great perspective. You could put together the greatest plan in the world that checks all the boxes. But if somebody says, well, if I do that, I'm going to get an ulcer, or I'm not going to be able to sleep, or it's going to be so boring that I'm going to want more, it's just not going to be the right fit.
That's right. It's in the end, I've heard, you know, take stocks down to your sleeping level. And for each of us, that's a different level. You know, there's plenty of people that I've worked with that, you know, have 401ks and they put that money away every time, and they throw the statements away every month and they say, I'm doing something bad. I'm not paying attention. I'm thinking, no, you're doing a great thing. Just keep doing what you're doing, because they're sticking to their plan and they're not relating all these other worries that they've got in their lives to their investments. And I think, in the end, they probably do better than the person who's worrying about it every other day.
I appreciate that. What inspired you to put pen to paper to become an author?
I think that it was partly thinking of these different experiences in my life and in the markets, and thinking about how I learned about the markets was through stories. And how I learn about anything, it's through, you know, listening to people's stories. And so I wanted to create a book that would explain the market through stories, as opposed to a textbook or something like that, and make it fun. I happened to meet an editor who had a, you know, just a comedic sense of humor, and I also wanted to make it fun and funny and readable. And during the pandemic, it was something that kept me busy. And was a fun way of looking back at my life and thinking, what were the stories that really impacted me that really has allowed me to have some success along the way?
And you've been at this for a little while, so I imagine it was probably harder than you thought to figure out which stories to include and which ones to leave out.
It really was, although there were a lot of fun memories, what the editor helped me do too was, I used to tell the story of my first client in about, a minute and a half. And she said, no, we want to learn about this eccentric lady and some of the weird, funny things that she did along the way. And so getting drawn out more than the typical time allowed me to reflect back at my life a lot more than I've done. So it was a fun, almost therapeutic experience too.
I don't doubt it. So somebody picks the book up. What are you hoping that they get out of it?
I hope that they can realize that, first of all, knowing yourself is so important. And then having a perspective of the market that is long term, focuses on the long run. And if you can do that, it will take away the stress that so many people feel about investing. We don't have to, the current events may or may not stress us out. But you don't have to apply it to your investments. You can make a plan, follow the plan, and worry about other things in your life. Enjoy your kids and this and that. But we don't have to, watch the financial shows nonstop and worry about what they're telling us. It doesn't matter. Those people there don't have any more ability to predict the future than anyone else. I would recommend for people to listen to shows like yourself, where you can actually learn long-term concepts and things to help you, whether it's how to help with your student loans and those kind of things, than worrying about which way the stock market's going to go. So, and hopefully through my fun stories, it gives that perspective that over time we learn through our own stories. Each of us have our own stories. So learn from those and have some fun with it.
I love it. Well, Mick, we are ready for your difference-making tip, sir. What do you have for us?
I guess it's not that different than what we've been talking about, but if we can remember that we, even though we each have our own unique paths in life, that we have a lot in common. Each of us are struggling with different challenges and different lessons. And if we can be just, first of all, compassionate with ourselves, that these lessons are there for us and that they appear out of the blue, it seems like, but each of us has that unique ability to then learn from that and then be compassionate with others. We're all facing these struggles. And so, and how that affects the market is that if we can look at that way with our investing too, that each of us are trying to tap into what's going on and have a little less, the whole FOMO, the fear of missing out, is a human emotion too. But stick to our guns, stick to our own long-term objectives and our own lessons that we need to learn.
Well, I
It's
think that is
long-winded for a
no.
thing, but I'm a long-winded person. Sorry about
I think that is great stuff. That definitely gets a come on.
that.
It's true. Feels like right now we are more apart than we've ever been, and maybe we are, but the reality is, to your point, we're a lot more similar than we are different. So
That's true.
thanks so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage? And where can they get their copy of Mellow Your Money?
Well, Mellow Your Money is on Amazon and I believe Barnes and Noble and other sites, but Amazon's probably the easiest. And the website is www.mellowyourmoney.com. And I'm open to any kind of communication. I'd love to talk to anybody. So Mick@mellowyourmoney.com is my email, and happy to communicate with anybody who feels like reaching out.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Mick your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Pick up your copy of Mellow Your Money. Find that on Amazon, wherever you buy your books, and then go to mellowyourmoney.com. Learn a little bit more about Mick and what he's working on and get in touch with them with your thoughts, or certainly if you have questions about investing and want to learn more about that. Thanks again, Mick.
Thank you, George. Really, really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Finally, a friendly reminder, it's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.